From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the third day of February, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and next week's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report with Mike Zuzolo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll hear all about the weather forecast from Eric Snodgrass at Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. If you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll also hear all of our Commodity Week program, including our panelists this week, Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Matt Bennett.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Mike Zuzolo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas now joins us to discuss some of the numbers. And Mike, I think today I'd like to really focus on next week's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. Those are due out, Wednesday of next week. I'm hopeful that you can help me work our way through some of these numbers. Let's start with the numbers for the United States to begin with. The trade estimates don't really predict any changes in ending stocks. That doesn't seem abnormal for the month of February. Any insight from your side of the ledger?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we did have some grain crushing report that showed December down and versus November. And I think that might be something to watch in terms of the corn market, Todd. I do think that the exports have come on enough that the trade is expecting now, me being part of that, if it's true that our exports are pretty tight at this stage and the USDA doesn't need to change much. So yeah, you're right. The difference between this month estimates and last month's USDA numbers are almost no difference, plus or minus 20 million bushels in wheat and corn. So it's really in the world numbers that you kind of take notice of the estimates versus January.
Well, let's move to those world numbers. What do we see from the trade estimates and your expectations for the ending stocks?
Yeah, the big thing that I notice is the wheat is staying about the same. But when you look at corn and beans, you notice that the trade is really taking a hard look at South America. And so they're shaving, going from about a 296.5 corn ending stocks number down to a 294 and roughly a half. And so you're taking 2 million off for corn ending stocks. I think that's almost all South America. And then in the beans, the trade's taking about 1.5 million tons off, going from 103.5 in USDA's January down to 102. So that's going to be, I think, the most critical part of whether we keep a strong basis here in this country, because it's still running $1.30 to $1.40 over in cattle country. I was just out there earlier this week, and you're still running 50 over here in eastern Kansas, and many parts of the central corn belt as well, running 30 to 50 over for spot corn and that same price for spot beans in many cases. So I think that's going to be a basis mover as far as whether we see that big of a drop because of South America. And I think the other thing goes back to is if we do see that big of a drop in the corn, it seems like it would make a bigger splash because Argentina's crop is shrinking and they're a much bigger percentage of the South American corn production versus their bean production. So does it make sense after next week's report to buy beans and sell corn, or does the trade pick it back up again where they were up until about a week ago and try and buy more corn acres in 23 by taking new crop beans lower?
Well, let's explore that just a bit more on what might happen, but use the fundamentals that the trade is estimating for the size of those South American crops. You mentioned a 2 million ton change in ending stocks for the world global stocks for corn. There's more than that, I think, that the trade says is coming out of Argentina, maybe about twice that much now. What's that number look like for corn?
It's interesting because for Argentina with USDA at around that 45, 46 level, it wouldn't be surprising to me to see the private estimates of 35, 36 be more accurate because of where this drought has taken us. We've gotten some rains, but not enough to really calm the overall production and bring the overall production number back up. And so I think that that's where in Brazil you have the potential for harvest delays in northern Brazil But does that really impact the production number? And I think that's where Argentina has really been the area where I think we've lost production in a significant amount. And so we have to remember Argentina is either the number two or three corn exporter each and every year behind us. And with Ukraine now, either number two or number three up until the war, you've got the top two of the top three corn exporters that are likely to be very much down in exportable supplies. And I've got my Argentine corn exports at 25 to 30 million metric tons. And, you know, that's down 6 to 8 from where USDA is at. So it's a pretty big amount percentage wise that I think we'll see in shrinkage. And add to that, Brazil's export pace to China has really caused some livestock fears about feeding supplies in Brazil. So I think we're going to be a lot tighter in corn. And I think that's why your cash basis is so much higher and your cash market so much higher than your futures right now.
So after the report, as long as it bears out what we think will be happening, a small crop, corn crop particularly, getting smaller in Argentina, the soybean crop getting smaller there as well, and soybeans and corn maybe holding steady, the corn crop not really in the ground very well in Brazil yet, second crop, safrinha, and that you might see the corn market lift in that case.
Yeah, this is the rub between the cash and the futures, and it is the rub is the wheat. And, you know, what we're seeing so far on Friday before the close is a real move up in the wheat, a true move up with the soft red wheat leading, which makes sense because the funds are at their biggest net short position since mid-late 2019. And so if we can get past the Federal Reserve and these jobs report numbers this week, establish new monthly highs in the hard red and soft red wheat, all of a sudden that report becomes a lot more important to the corn because the wheat's no longer dragging it down in the futures market. So I see that difference between cash and futures and corn especially highly reliant upon those outside markets and the futures trade not wanting to buy futures and wheat and kind of separating themselves out, and that's spilling over into the corn right now.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, you know, Mike Zuzulo will join us over at the Beef House for the All Day Ag Outlook on the 7th day of March. That's a Tuesday. You can do that as well. The cost is just $30. We have a great day planned for you. If you've been to the All Day Ag Outlook, this is the 32nd one. So I expect a few of you have. Another good one is in the pipeline at this point. The Farm Doc team, the agricultural economist, will be there. Many of the analysts that you hear on the air, including Mike Zuzulo, will be along with us. And so will Eric Snodgrass. He kicked us off last year, and he's going to start us again this year. And Eric is here now to talk to us about the weather. Eric, thank you for being with us, and thank you for setting us up for a great day on that 7th day of March, a Tuesday. Oh, the cost is $30 if you want to register. That includes the meal in the morning, well, roll and coffee, and the meal in the midday, and the whole day's event. You can do that at willag.org. Again, Eric, thanks for doing that for us.
Yeah, you bet. Looking forward to it.
So let's start, because usually about that time, we never know whether we're going to have weather that is just really hard to get through. Sometimes there's ice storms. Sometimes it's 65 degrees. What do we know about this spring?
Well, we know what the groundhog said, right? He came out, saw a shadow, and dove back in. And I don't quite get it because it was overcast in Pennsylvania that morning. And plus, you know, they pull him out just as the sun rises. So it's kind of an interesting time to get an opinion. But, you know, he's calling for 6 more weeks of winter. And to be honest, other than the cold air that we've got in place today, plus some of the cold air that drove that massive ice storm down in Texas in the Mid-South, we're going back over to a relatively mild pattern for a while. In fact, my kids are pretty excited when I told them that we might see temperatures crack in 50 here. And that's saying something for early to mid-February. So the pattern went back over quite mild, no big blocking, you know, ridges over Greenland or over Alaska to drive a lot of cold air in place. So once the cold air that's going through the Great Lakes today is out, we're going to see some mild conditions around this place for a while. But you know as well as I do, if it gets mild in winter, there will be moisture in that air because it's got to come from somewhere. That's south, that's the Gulf, and a big southeastern ridge could really pump quite a bit of moisture into it. So most long-range models suggest that now, all the way through when you have your meeting, there on the 7th and even a little bit beyond, we should be seeing a pretty active Ohio River Valley, mid-Mississippi River Valley, Tennessee Valley pattern in terms of just delivering quite a bit of moisture. So here's the context, all right, because that was a lot. We still have, when you get down there at about 40 inches, okay, 40 inches in the soil, there's still remnants of the drought we had last fall. And this moisture that's coming in that we're expecting here at the end of winter and the beginning of spring could go a very long way to revive that profile. I would call it kind of mission critical. We need to get it between now, some point between now and in April. And there's some better news for the eastern side of the Mississippi River versus the western.
Well, you better take me through that.
Well, the problem is that we've got two competing factors over spring. We are losing La Nina fast, so La Nina starting to fade is a good signal. That tends to give us better chances of having a more routine jet stream pattern in regular systems. But we still have a lot of warm water between the Hawaiian Islands and the Aleutian Islands. And so that's a part of a Pacific decadal oscillation that tends to make it drier the closer you get to the mountains. So the net effect of these things is, I think the Mississippi River might split the haves and the have-nots going through spring and into early summer. And NOAA and the National Weather Service are kind of picking up on the same thing, although I didn't hear the groundhog mention much about it, but the overall pattern just could be one where we could still be dealing with some risk for drought development in 2023, but I don't think it's going to be in our neck of the woods through spring and early summer.
Before we make our way south, because you mentioned La Nina to South America, can you recap this last week in the Southwest?
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing that's happened down there is that this push of Arctic air, which began life in Siberia, you know, dove all the way through and undercut some warm air in Texas. Now, remember, Texas does not, unfortunately, have the same way to deal with ice and sleet and snow like we do in the state of Illinois. And as a consequence, the amount of ice, and it was a tremendous amount. Some places picked up more than an inch of ice, just shut things down. And it's just going to be one of our, probably be the second $1 billion weather disaster of 2023, following the floods in California back in early January. But we're just today seeing things unfold. They're pretty happy that it's going to warm up. We're going to melt some of that, but that's when the cleanup will begin. And this is going to go down as one of the more substantial ice storms in U.S. history.
And finally, turn your attention to South America and a waning La Nina still?
Yeah, it is. It's still fading, especially off the west coast of South America. And that's good. We just want to keep seeing La Nina go out. But in the near term, absolutely soaking rains in central Brazil. I mean, very, very heavy rains. It's a little drier north of Mato Grosso, but they're not upset. They're going to be harvesting quickly. In fact, we'll get new harvest numbers out from them today. So far, everything I've heard from Brazil is that yields are big. They're just, the total production's big. Now, we know that Argentina had some good rains in late January, but the pattern's gone back over hot and dry for Argentina, which could negate some of that. And I'll tell you, just yesterday I was in Bloomington talking to a guy that farms both in Buenos Aires and also here in the state of Illinois. And, you know, he confirmed, because everything we planted early is gone. It's done. He says the only stuff that would benefit from the recent rains was stuff planted in the middle of the planting season or late. But now you say it's getting hot or dry again, they're going to worry because that subsurface soil moisture isn't there to revive the crops. So there's still going to be problems in Argentina moving forward.
And thank you much.
Yeah, you bet.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. There right now, you'll be able to sign up for that Ald Ag Outlook. It's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Don't wait. Tickets will go really quickly for this event. They're just $30, and that includes a cinnamon roll and coffee from the Beef House in the morning and your noon meal from the Beef House, along with the agricultural economist from the U of I, the analyst from the Will Ag team. Eric Snodgrass will kick us off, and we'll talk with a rep from John Deere about what they see for the future. It's all available for just $30 at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. Get yourself registered today. Do it online at willag.org, or you can do it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.